Welcome back, DMV. Stepping to the mic, your boy Andre Jones with, of course, the smooth left-hander, Ted Jeffries, Charlottesville UVA Pride. Hand clap. TJ, we're back at it again. We're back at it. How you been, my man?
I'm doing well, Dre. Doing well. Good to be back with you. Glad to have our esteemed guest with us. Go ahead and bring him in.
Yeah. We're going to get to the Wahoos later, T. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to do that to you right now, but we're going to get to our guest. DMV, you know who we are. We are the location for the best, the greatest icons from our area. And joining us today, there's no one greater than this guy right here. Pete Strickland. He is DeMatha, famed point guard from the 70s, went to the University of Pitt. And then from there, Pete, I hope, now I'm going to try to track you, Pete, from DeMatha, then you went back. Then coat on coach, we were at Old Dominion. We were at Coastal Carolina. Then Dayton. Okay, coach. And then NC State, GW, and now you're back home. Did I get it, coach? Did I get it?
Missed a couple, but, you know, there's a lot of stops. You know, you missed BMI.
Yes, I did. Excuse me for that. And one of the biggest ones, that, and I'm not making light of this, the head coach of the Irish national basketball team, and that's something I know you're very proud of that we'll speak about later in this podcast. But welcome to Step to the Mic, coach. How are you this morning?
Great. Great to see both of you guys.
All right. And you know, guys, we just want to bring everybody up. Currently, Pete is the interim head coach at our alma mater. Ted Jeffries is my alma mater, DeMatha Catholic High School, and Pete's alma mater. And that place is very special to us. Pete, talk to us about being there now as the interim head coach and working with this young group of Stags you're working with.
Well, there's a new gym.
How about that?
A little bit more space in there, Pete.
A little bit more room. And the acoustics are, by the way, the acoustics are awful. They are awful. I spent 2 weeks thinking these guys aren't listening, and they weren't. They really weren't listening because they couldn't hear me.
Right, right.
They're really terrible. The old gym, the acoustics are great. It's so neat being back. So much that's familiar as it would be to you guys, both of you guys too. And of course, so much new. So a nice dash of the old and a nice dash of the new. Kids are kids, you know, they're excited. They want to play. And of course, we get the best of the best at DeMatha. One of the assistants that was with Mike Jones, that's no longer with us, on the way out, he said, hey, you got the keys to a Bentley. Make sure you drive it right. And I am blessed with that. As Mike was, as Morgan was, we get the best of the best that come to DeMatha and want to prove themselves. And so that's great because we have brush fires at every position, which takes care of a lot of the motivation. Guys want to, they want to earn time. But it's been a process. It's been slow. It was a really good summer. We won the Summer League for the first time since 2014, buoyed by a lot of the JV guys that were there when everybody else went down to Peach Jam, and really impressive group that kind of hung in there and won a Summer League that was okay, somewhat depleted by, because all the high ride, the stars went down to Orlando or Peach Jam, as I mentioned, but it was still a nice accomplishment for those kids. And then the 2 weekends with Daryl Green coached him in the DMB, we were undefeated. So it was a really good, feel-good summer. And then the fall, it was just, and Ted knows, and you know too, Andre, you played for me. It was Pete the teacher, Pete the pivot foot, and, here we go. And, hey, playing straight lines. And then practice started, and it was almost like, where's Coach Jones? Where's Coach Jones? So it was an adjustment. So it was choppy. It was choppy early. I think the end result of it, the DeMatha basketball team this year will look a lot like Mike Jones's teams. We're going to play very similarly. We'll look a lot like Morgan's teams. We'll play very similarly. But, the nomenclature is going to be different. The manner in which I teach is going to be different. But really dovetailing nicely right now. We had a great weekend in Phoenix, beat two nationally recognized programs and teams. As you guys know, when you travel with your team, you either come together or you pull apart a little bit. We really came together on the trip, 4 overtime win against the great St. Ed's team out of Cleveland. And then a nice win against a very talented but young team at Pace Academy, where Ted's son goes. So that was, it was a great weekend for us, came back and had to make that trip to St. Mary's Riken, which I think is in America, but I'm not sure. It might be just on the border. But the schedule makers did us a favor. We had to play that one first, which was great. We got that out of the way before the, you know, the weather, the vagaries of the weather of January and February. So it was great. And really played well defensively. Got a great effort out of Bryson Hill, one of our seniors, unsigned seniors, and just a nice night for us. So, long answer, but nice.
Great answer.
Great to be back. And staff's been great. Kevin Cromer, Daryl Green are the holdovers with the varsity. Austin Freeman has now undertaken the role of being a head coach for the first time in his career of the JV. JV is really talented. We got three freshmen starting on the JV. It's just a neat group to see. So get to one of our games early and see these guys. Yeah. Freshmen are coming along nicely too.
And Coach, I don't want to jump in front of TJ, but one thing when you were talking about how everything's gone so far, the math is such a unique place that it's only had three basketball coaches in 70 years, if you think about it. And then the one thing about it is the family. So now you have Morgan, you have Mike, you have Pete, and then you go out west to Phoenix, and then you have Danny Ferry speak to our team. You have Adrian Branch speak to our team. And then the family comes and supports, because, you know, that's one thing that the math, people don't understand the culture if you never put on a uniform. And there is a bond between all the guys. You talk about Daryl Green, Kevin Cromer, Austin Freeman. There's not a better place to coach in America. Am I wrong for saying that?
Oh, no. You catalog my college coaching career, and Ted was with me at my stop at Coastal Carolina. This is the best job I've ever had. You know, I was 26 years in college coaching. This is the best job I've ever had. It's not even close.
What makes it great, Pete?
I do think the math of kids are cut above, particularly student athletes in the sport of basketball, just because it draws kids that want to compete. I mean, I talked to a guy whose father was a DeMatha graduate recently. And I said, you know what, why didn't you go to DeMatha? And he said, my dad said, if I want to play, you know, I shouldn't go to DeMatha. Well, my dad, God rest his soul, he said, you want to play? Go to DeMatha, see how good you are. And like, you know, I get goosebumps saying it. I mean, that's why we all went there, to compete and go against the best in the sport of men's basketball. And I think it's probably true in football, and certainly has become true in lacrosse and baseball over the years. So, and I'm sure I'm forgetting many, but it was our music program, my God, on and on. So I just think our kids are a little bit of a cut above. I really do. And, they're great to work with. They're motivated to be great basketball players. And of course, we got the carrot of academics that helps, that differentiates us too. So I think that's why. I think that's why is we do get the better raw material than others.
Yeah, but, I appreciate that answer, because that same mentality of competing at the highest level is what I took when I left DeMatha, and not being a starter on a very, you know, talented team, you know, the question was whether or not the ACC was the right level for me. And the reason why I chose to go to UVA amongst other schools is because I wanted to challenge myself, you know, at the highest level against some of the best talent in the country and arguably the best conference in the country at the time. So it's not just, you know, competing at DeMatha, but it's taking that same mentality to the next level. That's what's ingrained in you at DeMatha. So with that said, when you look at the differences, you've gotten the chance to coach, you know, Andre and, you know, well, prima donnas like Andre when he was there, and then myself. I don't want to, you know, I know therapy's been good for you to have to deal with Andre. When you think about the differences of players then players now, because you were in two different, you know, eras, how do you see, what are the major differences with the kids between the two different eras?
Well, you know, once you get in between the lines, I think they're pretty similar across almost every checkpoint. I do think parents are different in that, you know, we're having less kids now. You know, I was the third of four, and I think my dad was very unaware of what I was up to. Like, you know, Pete, did you still go to high school, right, Pete? Yeah. Okay, good. And you're okay. Because I see you leave early. I thought you still went. So Now, you know, people are having one kid, one child, two children, maybe a boy and a girl. So they become a little bit more focused on their children, and just because of the sheer numbers, you know, this is families are smaller. And so the focus becomes a little bit more intense on that particular kid. And, you know, we all live through our kids in one way or the other, but I think it, because, you know, this is my amateur sociologist view of it, but I do think parents are a little bit different. And, you know, what you try to talk to parents about, we had a parent meeting, of course, in the summer, and then another parent meeting with, before the season began, with all three levels, is just, you know, let them grow. Just like when they fell off the bike when they were three, you help them up, you put them back in the bike, you clean up their knee, and you tell them to try again. And, you know, that's what I encourage them to do to their children at the microwave when they warm up the pizza and the, you know, the kids are grousing about not playing enough, or, you know, coach got mad at me because I took a bad shot. And, well, you know, talk to the coach. But meanwhile, keep giving your all, you know, keep giving your all. And I think that's, we tend not to do that when we just maybe have just one child, because that child is so important to us. I mean, as anybody would feel in that situation. But yeah, the kids, I think once you get them between they are pulled at, I think, you know, AAU is here, and it's been here to stay for a long, long time. But there is another pull that, you know, I think when I was coming up playing, that wasn't there. And so you're trying to get their attention against a little bit more of a cacophony. I always mispronounce that word, but by a lot more voices in their background. Parents' voice is always going to be there, but now there's the AAU coach. There's the, oh my God, our first game, guys, I don't know if you saw our first game against Coolidge, they were introducing our guys. There were 14 people waiting, as you know, they introduce the starters and they run out, and 14 people waiting to take pictures, videographers, et cetera. And I think the pandemic has spawned some of that. So these guys, there's so many people in their ear that, it's a noisy din that we have to try to get through, pierce through, to make sure they hear about our team and what's important for our team and what we want them to do for our team and what we want them to do as a member of our team. And yeah, it's just so that there's a little bit, as I talk about it and talk through it, Ted, Andre, that's part of it.
You know, Pete, back in the 80s when I played for you, and when I watched Ted play and Adrian Branch playing the Branch brothers, everything, DeMatha was there, and you knew you had the national schedule, then you had conference, then you had city title, then you had Alhambra, and then that was pretty much it. For these kids now, it's conference play, it's Alhambra, it's the Geico National, it's ESPN, it's this, that. It's, the pool is so enormous. So you're asking kids to focus in when it's, like you said, it's just snapshots everywhere, ratings, rankings, Peach Jam, and then EYBL. It's a lot going on. How do you, like, lessen the noise, to your point, and say, guys, I hear you keep saying team, 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 but do those guys understand that's the ultimate goal? It's not individual. It's a team game, and we're going for a team accomplishment. Is that a challenge?
It always is as a coach. I mean, it's always a challenge to get them to play together and get them to play to, you know, if they play together, to get them to play to their fullest potential. So that's always a challenge. But, you know, the season's good because you get them every day, and you get them for 2.5 hours, and you have your chance to embed your, you know, your wants, your needs, your directives, your principles about team play. So it's great to have them every day. It's great to have them every day. I think there's a dissonance that occurs in the fall and the spring. But during the winter, I think we've got them. And our league, thank God, is good enough that they know that they have to tune in for us to you know, reach our goals. And with our league being so good, we know that if we can win our league, that all our other goals are taken care of. And, right, you know, thankfully, high school basketball is still just a little bit ahead of AAU. It's getting ever closer. You know, I think high school soccer has been lost to club soccer. I think some sports have been lost in the high school, you know, hierarchy, but basketball is still, high school is still number one, but AAU is chopping at the, is nipping at our heels. So we still do have their attention, but it's difficult to keep it.
How challenging has COVID been? Excuse me, Tiff, for cutting you off. Managing through a pandemic How challenging has that been for you with these children?
Well, we're 6-1, and we've had at this juncture we're 6-1, and we've had two cancellations. So it's a challenge, more so for Miss Wendy Norris and her training staff at the Matha. She has to really navigate through the directives from the county, and then we just implement them. But it's challenging. It's challenging for the kids. They want to play.
Pete, you leave the Matha, and you get your first head coaching job at Ravenscroft High School. You're a high school head coach at that point in time. What can that coaching stint teach you about where you are right now? Do you try to channel the energy that you had as a young coach, as a more seasoned coach now at DeMatha?
Yeah. That was a different challenge. They were 2-24 the year before I got there. So we were really building the foundation. This foundation was laid, cemented, stabilized,
yeah,
built on. So two different takes.
Let me try to clean the question up. But, with that program being 2-24 at the time, that I imagine there had to be a certain energy that you had to bring to try to teach a winning mentality, right? As opposed to where you are right now, like you said, that you've got a Bentley that you just have to drive carefully. But there has to be a certain energy that you bring to this job. Is there some similarities in that energy that you bring as the head coach at DeMatha at this stage?
Well, Ted, you really helped me learn that lesson. I mean, I went from being an assistant at Dayton to being a head coach at Coastal, and you were with me in my early years. And I remember you and Scott with your brilliant deductions after practice, and I was so jealous. And Ted's heard me tell this story, Andre, but I was so jealous in a good way because Ted and Scott were really helping me with their observations that I wasn't seeing it. And Ted and Scott said, well, coach, how can you? You're in the middle of every drill. You're denying the wing. You're fronting the post. You're a passer in every drill. And I had taken my assistant's energy and put it into being a head coach. I was so thrilled. And I wasn't seeing what I needed to see. And Ted and Scott, because I had such confidence in them as young coaches, I was able to step away and see what I needed to see. So my biggest challenge, because I've always got, knock on wood, I've always had great energy. So my biggest challenge has been to be able to step away and see what I need to see. And if I see what I need to see, I'm confident I'm going to make the right decisions about playing time and about how we're playing and what offense and what defense we're to be in. I've just had to do a better job over my career of channeling my energy and allowing my assistants to do a lot of the, particularly back at the Bath and now, to do some of the work that I would ordinarily want to do and be more prone to do. But the energy's there. It's just got to be channeled as a leader and seeing the things that every head coach and every leader needs to see is the overview, the bigger picture, as they say in all the corporate Tumes, seeing the bigger picture. And I'm able to do that. Got a good assistance. I mentioned Daryl and Kevin. We also hired Shantae Rogers, who was one of the best players ever played at GW. And I got to know in the recruiting process, even though we didn't get him. Great kid. He's a young adult and a great coach, great father, great husband. And he really has gotten the kids' attention. They really respect him. And he's been a great addition as well. So we've got a real solid staff that I can lean on and I can step back from and watch.
And coach, when you go back to your days playing for Coach Wooten, Morgan Wooten, and then coaching with him, give me some of your best stories. Give me some of the lessons that you learned from just, like you said, you learn a lot by watching, but being around him, what did you learn?
Well, he's so creative, Andre. Like, he, your son doesn't take out the trick. Ted, tell me your son's name again.
Gavin.
Gavin. Gosh, I should remember. He had a great week at camp. Yeah. So Gavin doesn't take the trash out. Gavin, take the trash out. And you come back down. Gavin, you come back down from upstairs. Gavin, take the trash out. And then third time, and, most of us, third or fourth time, we just start yelling. We just start yelling. Well, Morgan never got to that. He never got to that. He would get a creative solution to whatever it was because he was just so thoughtful and so bright. So there's countless examples of him being that kind of a insightful leader where, instead of beating a kid up, which, was, again, there's our tendency as coaches, he would find a creative way to do it. Maybe a little bit of sarcastic, as Ted knows. And we all know that was part of Morgan's, take it. I've inherited some of that, unfortunately. because I was around him for so long, helped him run his camp for 20 years. But it was always a creative solution. I remember Bill Ruback was senior with me in 75 and really helped us get to the city title and, you know, win it my senior year. Bill had a great finish to his senior year. But Bill would catch the ball in the post and dribble. And Morgan, of course, as every coach, Bill, don't dribble the ball in the post. Don't dribble. Well, Bill couldn't get out of the habit. So one day in practice, he said, wait a second, let's stop. He stops practice. Everybody go over here, get a drink. Get a drink. We never got a drink. We never got a drink. Get a drink and come out of practice. Like, that was unheard of. So we go get a drink. He says, no, Bill, you stay there. You dribble the ball. Bill likes to dribble. Bill loves to dribble. Let's watch Bill dribble. And then Bill's getting all red faced. He picks up. No, Bill, you keep dribbling. You keep dribbling. And then he says, Bill, can you dribble two balls? And Bill says, oh,
yeah, I guess.
And he goes, he gives Bill two balls. So Bill dribbles two balls. He says, look at Bill dribble, guys. Bill loves to dribble. He loves to dribble so much. He's dribbling two balls. He loves to dribble. Well, never dribbled again.
Right.
Now you say, you say, well, that's humiliating and that's embarrassing. And but it was within the confines of the team. And I'd probably exaggerate a little bit of the drama of it. But again, Bill had the greatest pivot foot any high school player for the next 12 games. And he took us to the city title. And he tried the other ways. He tried the other ways, but they did not work. So he had to get his attention. You know, he told Gavin to take trash out three different ways. And then finally Ted said, well, I guess if you don't want to take the trash out, let's do this.
Right.
You know, I don't know what you do then. But yeah, but Morgan always had that creative thought. And he was a great, as you guys both know, he's a great communicator. He was able to get across his point and be clear. And that always helps. I mean, I always say when people ask me about Morgan's effect, like, he never sent a team out on the floor that didn't know exactly what they were supposed to do. And that's my goal as a coach. You want to send your team out on the floor that knows exactly what they're supposed to do in every situation. Doesn't mean we do it as a team. Doesn't mean we're perfect. No. But it means at least we know what we're supposed to do. And because of Morgan's clarity as a communicator and his ability to communicate directly and clear, that's what his team's always had. And that's what I strive to have with our team.
Coach, when after your playing days at DeMatha, you had an outstanding career at Pitt, and then you went overseas and played in Ireland. Can you, give us that time period of what it was like to play before Pitt was in the Big East to the ACC, and then what drove you to play international, and how was that game so different once you went overseas?
Yeah, and it was a totally different game. Of course I was so thrilled to play professional basketball. I didn't make much money. Wasn't Italy or France or some of the leagues that were making a lot of money, but it was still, quote, professional basketball play. I had a great experience, and they were so ripe for basketball knowledge. And, I was fresh off of 4 years with another great teacher at Pitt, a guy by the name of Tim Gergerich, who still thought to be the best teacher in the pro game. So how lucky was I? I played for the best teacher in the high school game, arguably Morgan. And then I go and play for the best teacher in the college game at the time, Tim Gergerich. And I was bursting with knowledge of the game that I wanted to share. And I just happened to hit on a city and an area in Cork in Ireland that was really dying to grow in basketball. And I became, it became a chance for me to really put a fingerprint on the development of basketball, particularly in the South. So that was really, really a lot of fun. And to continue to play was really neat. And my relationship with Ireland continued over the years. I went back for a second year and then returned and just went over and worked camps for many years. Ted was over there, I know, and hired a guy who worked with Ted by the name of Enda Burt, who was a previous Irish national team coach. And just a rich kind of Rolodex of great relationships and friends that I've stayed in touch with. And then, of course, they'd always talk to me about being the Irish national team coach, and I could never do it when I was college coach because of regulations, et cetera, or time, one of the two. And then finally, when I got out of college coach, I was able to do it. And that was a real neat kind of cherry on top, so to speak, that allowed me to go back. And like, I coached four of my good friend's sons on the national team.
Wow.
And that was a treat.
when you talk about the game, Coach, the international game, the game here in the United States, how much has that driven you? I mean, how much you said, you know, I love this game so much, I'm so passionate that it applies to me here, coaching in the ACC, coaching in the A-10, coaching, and then I could go overseas and coach over there and then take a team to a preliminary for the Olympics. I mean, it just never stops. How much do you owe this game a lot for what it's done for you in your life?
Oh, it's just about every relationship that I have in my life has been through basketball. I've traveled. I've been on, you know, I've traveled through, I think, 33 countries, and basketball has taken me to every one of them. It's an incredible vehicle for growth. You know, Mary Catherine, my wife, and I have traveled most of those places together. And again, the relationships that we've met and fostered, and it's just been, God, it's touched my life. The experience with the Irish national team was extraordinary. Basketball wise, I mean, their game's better than ours, guys. You know, they've been playing with one post man for, you know, 80 years, and we're just now starting to play four out, one in. As Ted remembers, we used to tell Ted he couldn't come outside. Shame we told him that, because Ted had a great touch. You know, stay in there, Ted, screen for the other big guy and screen him, you know. All right, maybe if they take away the post up, you can go to the elbow, but that's all. Don't venture out any further. Well, in Europe, they've been playing with four out, one in forever. So I really, God, it would talk about growing as a coach, you know, in your older years. It was a tremendous experience for me to experience what happened over there and the way the game has evolved. Our players are better, but I think their game is better just because, again, we're evolving to the way they play, and they've been playing that way for a long time.
Pete, you talked about relationships, and you've worked with a lot of great coaches. You talked about Morgan, obviously, and the influence that he had, but you also worked for Oliver Purnell. You know, you worked with former DeMatha guy, Sidney Lowe. You also, Joe Cotafio of VMI. But, you know, Andre and I are spoiled because we know you, we've known you for years. But we also know what a great storyteller you are. Tell us about some of the great stories that you have from your days working with coaches like Joe Cotafio. And I, you know, obviously I'm leading you into a couple of ones that I'm privy to, but, you know, Oliver Purnell about, you know, his days working with Lefty Brazelle, the great left-hander. I mean, you are a great orator of stories. So we'd love to share with our listening crowd some of the great history in your days.
Well, Joe, who had his touch with the Mather, Joe Cotafio was the head coach at BMI when I got there. And that was my first college job. And he was something else. Great, great game coach. I learned so much from him as a game coach. He was just phenomenal, just quick with it, and always made the right adjustments. So one day I'm on the bench with him, and I'm like, somebody's, you know, messing up. And we're leaving him in there. And I'm like, God. So I put my head in the lion's mouth again, as assistants, as you have to do. And I said, Joe, we've got to get Jimmy out of there. My God, he's killed us. He goes, and he turns and he faces the bench and he goes, what All-American, with maybe a little adjective before All-American, what All-American would you like me to put in for him, Pete? Which All-American would you like me to put in? So now he's completely deflated the bench because now they know they're not All-Americans, and that's a shame. But
at VMI.
Which All-American would you like me to put in for Jimmy, Pete? Would you like me to put in this guy? Would you like me to put in this guy? Oliver had some great stories about Lefty. It was just, you know, he never stopped thinking about recruiting. Oliver said they were recruiting J.R. Reed, great big guy that the older folks listening would remember, who played at Carolina, had a great career. And he was from Virginia Beach. And he said, yeah, you got to go down there and recruit him. And he said, okay, Coach Oliver said, no problem. You know, when do you want me to come back? When you sign him. That ended up being 3.5 weeks. He didn't sign him. And Oliver said, I wasn't sure if I should come back or if I could come back. And working for Sid was great. I remember when Sid first got to state, and he had been in the pros for so long, and he's back there now and was so respected on the pro level. Cleveland, he's got a young team in Cleveland that's playing so well right now. Sidney loves him attitudinally. He said, these guys just want to get better. Mobley from USC and Garland, he just loves their group. and they're overachieving. But when he first got to State, I remember we were recruiting the Plumleys. We all know the Plumleys, all three of them went to Duke. And their head coach was a friend of mine. And we got him to come to team camp. And they really were math science guys. They really wanted. And at NC State, we're math science. We had a great chat at him. And Sidney was like, I don't know, something's missing. Then I realized what Sidney was saying was like, you know, they were typical high school bodies, you know. And I realized Sidney was saying something's missing. Yeah, these are not, they're not pro bodies. No, they're not. They're high school juniors, high school sophomores. And I remember Sidney admitted later, he said, yeah, I had to kind of adjust to the bodies that were recruiting. I was saying, Coach, you're really going to be good. Like, these guys are really going to be good. Yeah. We'll get them stronger. Don't worry. We'll get them stronger. It was part of Sidney's adjustment to the college game. Just yeah. So used to those pros that are already, you know, kind of
chiseled.
Complete packages. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome stuff, Pete.
Coach, I want to take you down a path, and I don't want to catch you off guard before we let you go. This new thing with the NIL deal and the way college basketball has evolved to the one-and-dones, or kind of kids like skipping college and going to different leagues to get paychecks. The state of the game right now, the collegiate game, is it good? Is it bad? How's it changed? Where are we going to go with this thing, and where will we end up in the next 5 to 10 years?
I don't know how college coaches are doing it, Andre. It's just there's so many variables now. I think, you know, guys are going to schools because, you know, coaches are saying, if you come here, you're going to go to, you know, Jeffrey's Deli, and, you know, you're going to do 10 radio spots, and that's going to be $8,400. You're going to go to Jones Chevrolet, and you're going to do 5 TV spots, and you're going to make the $12,400. And they're, you know, essentially they can guarantee them that, you know, and so, you know, but the underside of that is, let's say a young man goes to school and he's got these things that are kind of prearranged, and they can tell. But you know, the language and the contracts are going to be to the deli's favor and to the Chevrolet dealer's favor. So then this freshman, like we all did, Ted started 4 years in a row at University of Virginia and at Mia Pitt. And let's say our freshman year, of course, we had a 2-for-12 game. We had a stinker. And coach yelled at us, and then we got back on the horse and we got better. Well, now the deli says, you know what, let's hold it on that radio spot this week. And the Chevrolet says, yeah, let's just take a couple weeks off, you know, for that. And the money's not coming in, and the people back home are saying, where's the money? Where's the money? And now this poor freshman is feeling the pressure of performing in a way in which we didn't feel, other than the fact we had a stinker and the guys in the dorm were saying, hey, you stink. And hang in there, or your friends are telling you hang in there. And that's called being a professional. Mm-hmm. And we're putting this on college kids' shoulders now. And I'm not sure that that's going to work out in the long run. So the other side of it, you know, you talk about mental health and Simon Biles, and it's all come to the fore now. And we lived it, Ted, you and I, we've lived it. And so it's real. And it's definitely a professional arrangement. And again, everybody's career in college, even a guy like Tez, who started every game in his four-year career, it's going to go up and down and up and down. And eventually, hopefully, it goes up. But it's in those downs that you learn and you grow. And if you have the right coaching staff that's committed to you, you know, it all works out. But there's that element now that the compensation that can change that. And also, guys, remember we used to give each other a hard time when guys would get ink? Oh, you got ink. In the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. Oh, your head's going to get too big. You got ink, right? These guys get ink every day. They just, if they don't feel like what coach said to them is, you know, helpful, just go to their Instagram page and watch their highlights from a game where they lost by 20, but they had 2 dunks. So it's, you know, again, back to what we talked about earlier, there's a lot of outside influences that are challenging these guys' attention. And, It all takes you away from the task at hand, which is being a part of a team and a part of a successful team. So there's good things about the NIL, and I think we're seeing those, you know, particularly kids that, you know, I think deserve that acclaim.
Pete, when you think about it, we've had mm-hmm. other coaches that talked about we're not teaching these kids accountability and commitment to something. So, you know, if you go to whatever state university, and things don't work out well for you there, you know, this portal is there for you to be able to just jump. And it's, that could be any year. But, you know, back in our day, when you signed your NIL, you know, you were committed to whatever university. Do you feel like we're not teaching these kids accountability or stick-to-itiveness when things get hard because of the NIL and the portal, more specifically?
Yeah, I think, you know, how do we all grow? We fail. And we just gritted our teeth and got back on the bike, back to that original example. That now it's like, all right, I fail. Let me go somewhere else. That's not the recipe. That's not the recipe. Of course, sometimes it is. Right. But it's just so available now. And there probably was a real stroke of genius in that. If you do leave, you have to sit out of here. And that made guys say, all right, I'll stick it out. And I saw it with my two sons through college, that when they hit those potholes, they got up out of them. And, you know, Ted knows my younger son, Connor, very well. And, you know, Connor's got the most confidence of anybody in our family because he hit some potholes and he just kind of came through it and, you know, realized he did it. You know, he did it. He handled the challenge of the disappointment of not starting, you know, during his career when he thought he should have been, and just kept working and got opportunity, and took advantage of it. And, it was great. It was great. So, you know, that's how we succeed. And I think to the crutch of the portal is it can be very helpful, but for the most part, I think it can be detrimental to their growth if that's the way they get out of, you know, disappointment or the way they handle adversity is just to flee.
Coach, before we let you go, TJ and I, we always like to ask five questions. So I got five questions for you. I'm going to catch you off guard, but you swing for the fences on this one, Coach. All right. Number five, favorite restaurant to hit when you were on the road coaching?
One in Greensboro called Pastabilities. Pastabilities. Greensboro.
Oh, great name. Yeah.
Pastabilities. Okay. Yeah, really all right. Name. All right.
Soup of the day.
Okay.
Didn't even have to ask what it was. Just soup of the day. Get me started.
Best game you ever played in college?
Beat Maryland in overtime. Had 8 of the 10 points we scored.
Best high school.
I was coming off of a game against GW where I turned it over at the buzzer to lose. And my coach drew his NIT watch at the wall and broke it to make sure that I knew that I was the reason he broke his watch. And I got dispatched to the bench, didn't play for 38 minutes for 38 minutes in that next Maryland game. I was banished to Siberia. And then because the guy that he put in my place fouled out, he had to put me in with 2 minutes left, or about minute 20 left. So with 20 seconds left, I brought the ball up, hit my teammate in the corner, Larry Harris, who Ted knows well. Yeah. Larry hit the jumper. We go to overtime. I score 8 of our 10 points in overtime. I wanted to stuff the ball in my coach's face. But I didn't, because there was another game.
Had that been the end of the season, he might have caught one.
Okay, I got one. I got one more for you. I got actually three more. Best game in high school?
City title game, 75, not even close. We beat a Dunbar team with Stacy Robinson, who I still think is as good a guard as ever came out of here. You know, the Dern brothers, Lonnie and Bebe, mm-hmm. Craig Shelton, Big Sky, Joe Tweet. You know, city title win. That was, yeah, and we Hawkeye played great. We, you know, Rue played great with Tony Ellis, lockdown Stacy. It was great stuff. Stacy's a good friend now. Stacy comes over to math a lot. He's talked to me two or three times. And speaking back to you, talk about Danny and Adrian speaking to our team. How many high schools in the country can have two NBA champions address their team in successive nights?
Right.
Just one, guys.
Right.
Just one.
Yeah. That's phenomenal.
And Adrian was awesome. Adrian, as you know, dynamic and dramatic.
Yeah.
And I told the guys, forget the Grant brothers. Let's talk about the Branch brothers. They started the brother act at the Mather. You know, well, the height's probably started Billy and Ray. But I said the Branch brothers kept it going. Tommy was a great player. May he rest in peace. And then Danny the next night was Danny. He was great too in his way. And what a special thing for those guys to be treated to talking to two NBA champions.
Yeah. Fantastic. Coach, two more. Greatest lesson you ever learned from the game?
Persevere. Okay. And part of that's just being positive. Just being positive about your potential, your abilities, and just to plug back in again. Just get back in the fray. I mean, and that's what DeMatha taught me. You can't take any time to wallow. You just can't. It's just too competitive. And I love that about what DeMatha taught me.
And Coach, you alluded to this earlier, but if you had to do one thing in life, one thing that you could do that you maybe have made a mistake to do over, or maybe to get it right this time, what would that one thing be?
Well, I asked Mary Catherine to marry me in 6 weeks. I'd have done it in five.
Amen. Amen. Yes. Best thing ever happened to you.
Yeah.
Oh, no question. No question. You're coaching. You got a wife who loves you and supports you. Well, you're pretty lucky.
All right.
Phenomenal.
Coach, I'll let TJ close this out, but it's been a joy talking to you, reminiscing. And, Coach, we wish you the best. We wish your team the best this year. I know it'll be hard to challenge.
Of course, it's your team. It's your team. Of course you wish us that.
Well, I got to stay objective with this podcast here. But navigating through COVID and, the challenges that will bring, we wish everybody to stay safe. And, you guys get through it and bring the championship home, in true style. And I should have asked you, how hard was it to coach Mike Jones? Was he one of the best players you ever coached?
Well, Mike was one of the smartest players I've ever coached. Mm-hmm. Very smart, instinctive, and but more than just instinctive. Like he had a great mind for the game. Not a surprise he became a great coach and is a great coach. He wasn't that hard to coach. Although yes, because he was smarter, he would have questions, but worked. He had to make a tough transition. He went from playing with his back to the basket on the undefeated DeMatha team to coming to us at Old Dominion. And having to face, and he made the transition. I remember seeing him play for the Pacers in a, in his pro, efforts at the Dayton Arena, and playing point guard, against Michael Jordan's Bulls in an exhibition game. He made the full transition, and that's because of his knowledge of the game, his insightfulness, and his inquisitiveness. He, good players have questions, and he was that. He was that.
And when I say hard, Coach, I mean, you kind of answered the question I meant to ask you, because DeMatha playing with Coach Wooten, he was in the post. And then that transition out and playing on the wing.
Yeah,
and
Morgan played him.
Bring it out of him.
Morgan played him in a place where I'm sure he felt like he was, that wasn't his ultimate destination. And yet it was best for the team. They go undefeated, 30-0, I believe, one of Morgan's best teams, if not his best team, arguably. Just never flinched. Never flinched, and it just was willing to play whatever role was best for the team.
Uh-huh.
Not a surprise that's what Mike did.
Amen. Amen.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. One of the DMV's best and brightest and, just all around great guy. We're spoiled because we love him. We've known him for years. He helped basically raise both Andre and I. But he brings a wealth of information and knowledge to the game of basketball. We're lucky to have him at the helm at DeMatha. Pete Strickland, thanks for joining us.
Guys, thanks a lot. This has been a thrill for me.